This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, the podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Whitten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah, and my co-host, Haley Malley.
That line you're worrying about crossing. Look behind you.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio. Now we have maths.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 93 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where tonight we never call a cause truly lost, hold on to hope, and put a rucksack full of faith on the shoulders of our showrunner, knowing in both our Gallifreyan hearts that with the right amount of time and attention, we can be convinced to care about the companion that sort of wasn't. I am Keir, joining you in the GPR studios. With me, as always, is Jay. Good evening, Jay. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Really good. Really good tonight. And Haley over there in the corner. Haley, put your drink down. Say hello.
Hi, how are you?
Outstanding. Fantastic. Well, so what are we doing this week, kids?
This week, we're going to risk angering a few fanboys and girls, but with good reason. Clara Oswald has been a divisive companion since Series 7B, with many Whovians, particularly newer to the program, who genuinely enjoy her youthful energy, humor, and obvious devotion to the Doctor. Others, however, see her as an underdeveloped character, scattered and inconsistent, and wonder if she could have been better written or represented. We have our opinions, as you know, but we'll try and remain objective. Really. No, really.
We are each allowed, you know, we have three tokens in our hand, you know, three hate tokens. Every time you play one, put it in the bucket.
Yeah, so this is one that obviously a lot of people have voiced their opinions on, and it runs the whole gamut. You know, there's some people that think that she's the best thing to ever hit the show, and others think that, you know, it's absolutely horrible that, you know, she deserves to be lower on the list than Time Lash. So we're going to look at some of those and see where exactly she truly fits in.
Right. Hopefully with a little bit of basis in fact to back it up. I mean, everybody, at the end of it all, everybody's got their opinion. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they can really base that in something that they can say, look, it's item here, here, and here. And you know, this worked, this didn't work, this didn't work. So that's two in the negative, one in the positive column. Ergo, no, get rid of her. So what do we got?
Well, we've actually, I put the question out there and got a lot of feedback from listeners. We got quite a few hits on Twitter. Ann Lanta said, I do like Clara, but I loved Amy and Rory. I still desperately miss them.
Okay.
And I mean, that kind of brings up a good point is when you have a companion that comes in after a companion that is so loved and adored, it's difficult to really give them a fair shake. I mean, look at Martha, you know.
Yeah, that was actually another one of our listeners' points. Bobby Honeycutt had said, you know, it's a hard act to follow. Mm-hmm. You know, Martha got a bum rap because she followed Rose, and Rose was just everyone's golden child, no pun intended. But it's, you know, it puts you in a negative position, just like the Doctors themselves, you know, put another actor in that role, you've got some big shoes to fill, and you're coming in it with a, you know, a really fine lens cast on you. So.
Yeah, very, very true.
But what about something in the genuine positive column to say about her character and what it does for the show, where the show is right now? Listen to the crickets. Let's be more systematic about this, because I think, as far as I see it, we got off to a really kind of stutter start meeting Clara, or I should say meeting the Oswalds to begin with, because we ended up seeing her before we expected to see her and so forth. It was kind of a, you know, a Donna Noble sort of pump fake kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it set a precedent for not really knowing or understanding what she was supposed to be. So you could see that as a positive or a negative, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I really truly believe that the whole problem with Clara is that there was way too much time beating us over the head with the fact that she was a mystery and not enough time developing her character. There was too much focus put on who, like, what she was and how she fit in as opposed to who the person actually is.
Okay.
See, I think the problem was they introduced us to two fairly interesting characters with Oswin Oswald and Victorian Clara, and then gave us a really dull character to go through 7B with.
Well, there was that, but I wasn't trying to play my hate token that soon.
I'll whip it out, because I'll stop talking pretty soon.
Well, it's not necessarily a matter of a hate comment. That's legitimate. I mean, you run in a really tricky kind of razor's edge there. You're trying to create a character who is, you know, an enigma wrapped in a mystery steeped in secret sauce, and yet you want people to enjoy that character. But it's a different essential character every time around. So if you're not giving enough of that little thread of clues for people to follow and say, oh, okay, I'm starting to see a little hint of a connection here, and some of her character aspects are consistent that I enjoy or that I'm curious about, then you may not know her that well, but you're interested in her. I don't know if that was executed as well as it should have been. I guess that was kind of one of my hanging points about the early days of Clara.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess, this is the other thing I wanted to toss up to you two, was the idea of inconsistencies, not necessarily just in the characters, but her abilities. I mean, I know which episode was it when we got to it, and all of a sudden, it was our Spoonhead episode, and all of a sudden she's got these computer skills that just came out of nowhere, and she's just all freaking swish with a laptop and doing all this. And then in another one, she's just barely getting by, you know, trying to figure out a password for the household Wi-Fi and asking the teenagers in the house, you know, how the hell to spell it. And
that was the same episode, and they kind of tried to explain that, sort of like they hacked into her and gave her all kinds of computer skills. So I mean, there was at least some vague semblance of attempting to give her reason there. But then you look into like Nightmare and Silver, and all of a sudden she's, you know, adept at leading a military platoon, and mm-hmm. we're just supposed to accept that because she's Clara and it happens.
Well, she played a lot of Ghost Ops. So it developed that skill.
Yeah.
She couldn't play online because she couldn't figure out the password.
Run, you clever boy, and something, something, something.
Oh, but that's the problem that we have, though, is the inconsistencies. I mean, like Haley said, you know, we had some really great characters that we were introduced to first. And that's, you know, the first time we see Oswin, and it's like, oh, okay, well, she's dead. We're done with her. Okay, move on. We, you know, say goodbye to the Ponds, and we're all heartbroken, and things, you know, fade. Then we get to the Christmas special, and we're introduced to Victorian Clara, and we think this is the one that we're going to keep. This is the one, this is who we have. And so we get all excited, and we love her, and she's fantastic.
And then chuck her off a cloud.
Yeah. But that was the last thing we saw before we were introduced to Clara Prime. So that's fresh in our mind, and we're like, okay, this is the kind of character we're going to... No, I guess not. Well, she still watches kids, but no, this is not Clara. This is not the one that I want.
Right.
So it's, and then you throw in all of the inconsistencies between one episode to the next, which, I mean, we've talked about that before, and it really makes it hard to care about this character because, okay, I absolutely adore her here. So logic states that next week she's going to be, you know, crap.
Mm. Well, you know, you'd go from episodes like Cold War,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, it was a matter of she was sort of the classic companion in that case, you know, asking the questions, you know, being there as the catalyst to make some, you know, capital letters, big, awful stuff happen. But asking, you know, the right things of the right people to lead them to the conclusion that they need to be. That's kind of what, you know, in the whole Scooby-Doo sense, that's kind of what we expected the companion always to be when you get to those little canned episodes. Then you go along to something like Hyde or Crimson Horror. Crimson Horror, I don't even really know what her role or significance other than to put her on a glass dome and give her a couple of lines towards the end. And I know we ran into, you know, the realization that they might not have, or that they might have been better served putting the episodes in slightly different order. You know, sort of give us a, you know, wade into the water with her, so to speak, if it wasn't really necessary to, you know, if there was no continuity from one episode to the next, as far as she was concerned, then why not come up with one that followed, I don't know, subtle degrees of exposure? But I don't want to get on necessarily the beating up on what she did with, you know, what she, the actress, what Jenna Coleman did with what she was handed. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering whether or not the character itself was handled with the most deft hand.
Well, I mean, a lot of the problem was the difference between one writer to the next and no one really having the full Clara story to really try and flesh it out. I mean, Moffat kept that really close to the chest. That was his baby. He wanted to wrap that one up. So these people got a basic outline of the character and said, yeah, here's what you need to do. Go with it. And so they just kind of wrote what they thought based on this, you know, sparse outline kind of thing. Mm. But then if you look at even Moffat, who kind of fumbled the ball, I mean, look at the 50th, you know, and we got an email from Rubik's King who brought this up. You know, he said that, he was intrigued that she was able to change the minds of three doctors in the 50th. You know, she was the one that basically stopped him from doing the thing that had been haunting him for centuries. Ooh. And, you know, I mean, it made her a very important character in that moment. But then look at, you know, the very next episode in Time of the Doctor, when, you know, we get this whole, like, she's all wrapped up in her family and the doctor's got this thing going on, but she doesn't care because she's supposed to have a boyfriend at Christmas dinner and all this stuff. And it just, it felt like this was not the same character that we just saw.
True. I'm not really sure. It seems like to a certain degree that the episode would be written with her sort of as a non-existent character, and then she'd be retrofitted into whatever else the story was accomplishing that time around. It seemed like in a lot of cases she was like an appendage, an add-on to the core script. That you could have stuck anybody there. It could have been a companion of the episode, you know, a single installation, somebody you just meet and they're gone within that episode. But it just happened to be, you know, this Clara this time around. Right. I don't know. I'm a little confused by all of that. I'm not going to say I outright hated anything that they did with her in any of the episodes. Hate is too strong a word. I just didn't get certain ones, and other ones I could have easily have done without and not missed anything. So maybe that's why I just don't feel invested at all in Clara.
See, I think that's even worse than if you did hate her, because if you hated her, at least she's eliciting strong emotions. I'm mm-hmm. just at the point where it's like, I don't have strong opinions about her.
She's just the living flesh. She's just this thing.
Well, and that, honestly, that's the feel of a lot of the feedback that we got. I mean, at Mimi Dove on Twitter wrote us and said, I like Clara, but I don't love her. I think she doesn't have that much chemistry with the doctor. I liked Victorian Clara though. Dare to Smile wrote us and said, you know, Rose is my favorite companion by far, but Clara's a good second. And then said, it's grand having a brunette to finally have someone to cosplay as.
Like, I'm going to call bunk on that, because if you're liking a character simply because it makes your cosplay easier.
And that's what I'm saying, is like, if that's the most compelling reason for liking a companion, then clearly there's something wrong.
I cry foul.
At Closet Brit wrote and said, I like her now, but pre Time of the Doctor, not so much. Hoping for more character development in series 8 to make that make me more attached. So again, that theme of, yeah, I didn't really care. Now I'm excited about what's coming, but nothing really solid yet.
Okay. Well, that brings up a point that I wanted to hash out here. And that has to do with the post 50th, I should say post Day of the Doctor, determination of, are we down to our last iteration of Clara? Are we sticking with her on this one? What does she have in her box of, you know, boxes of skills? What degree of memory of previous experiences does she really carry? They haven't really felt it necessary to bring up anything having to do with the time stream, the great intelligence, or the sacrifice that was made this time around, other than just, you know, the doctor gushing on the fact that I now know you are my impossible girl. And that's all wonderful to say, and it's very gripping and emotional with a Murray Gold score behind you. But who is that we have now? And because this is going to be really relevant to where things go for about the next 6 to 8 episodes with a new doctor in the shoes.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't think that we're going to get that, though. Everything's going to be focused on the new Doctor, learning him, finding out who he is, that kind of thing. And Clara is going to have whatever skills, whatever memories, and whatever talents the plot needs at that point. And it's not going to be a set thing. And I don't think that it's going to be a good time for her to be built as a character. The opportunity's there. The way that Moffat writes and the way that things go, I don't see it happening.
Okay. Because she could very easily be the rock. You know, she could be the constancy that he relies on, or whether he even asks for it. Well, we happen to know through, you know, some teasery stuff that's going on that he is going to try to rely on her for quite a bit. But, you know, is she going to step up to be the guide?
Mm-hmm.
As he gets through this. And so as we're learning, and this, again, this is a classic companion maneuver here of having the companion be the one to help us get our, to draw out what we need from whatever the big mystery of the moment is, whether it's something going on within the episode that we're trying to figure out and the companion asks the questions, or whether it's, you know, Davison or Baker or somebody, you know, a new doctor going off their nut. And we need the companions to rein them in and get us to solid ground as well. You know, get the characters there, but get the audience there as well. So this is a great opportunity. You want to earn some Clara bucks here? This is it.
Yeah, it is a great spot for it. I'm not sure yet whether or not it's actually going to happen.
Mm.
But I guess we'll see.
Okay. Well, we hit on some of the various listener feedback here. I just want to let listeners know. I mean, we put this out to folks, and I'm really so appreciative that we got so many people, you know, chiming in on their opinions, you know, positively, negatively, or just neutral about it, because neutral is totally legit.
Yeah,
I may be very well, you know, towards center on this, because I just, it's like, you've got something that could work if you just, you know, give it that adjustment. But is that really what's within the top, you know, the top three bullet lists on Muffet's, you know, plate of, all right, I need to advance the show to get from here to here. I need to build up towards this huge finale. Oh, and I need to make Clara somebody that people actually care about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do have people that do genuinely care about her. Like, Stargate Pioneer called us in and left us a voicemail. So let's listen to that real quick.
Hey, Jay, Haley, and Kira. This is Stargate Pioneer. I took the bait. I had to call in about Clara. You guys seem like you're going to trash her. I have to step in and I have to support my girl. I like her. I like Jenna Coleman playing Clara. She's up there to me with Agent 13 of Captain America, the Winter Soldier, played by Emily Van Camp. Felicity on the CW show Arrow, played by Emily Bett Rickards. Dr. Carol Marcus in Star Trek Into Darkness, played by Alice Eve and Sif. And Thor, played by Jamie Alexander. She is that level, that's capable to me. And Clara, as a character, she is capable of so much. She saved the Doctors in multiple times, multiple timelines, multiple places in the universe. She's very versatile, able to adapt to whatever situation she falls into. She has successfully, also in the 50th, dealt with multiple Doctors simultaneously, and she has literally helped save the universe. So how many companions can you say have done both of those things? Saved the Doctors throughout all his timelines and all his regenerations, and dealt with multiple Doctors simultaneously. Clara is cute, she's sassy, she's intelligent, all pluses in my book. She is not romantically interested in the Doctor. Another kind of plus, because she, you know, the Doctor is married, so it's kind of, it would be kind of rough at this point in time for that to happen. And also, Clara started out in a really weird place with the TARDIS, and she has had to earn the TARDIS's friendship. They seem very close now, so I would put that in a feather in her cap. And plus, let's face it, Jenna Louise Coleman was in a Marvel movie. Yes, that's right. She was in Captain America, the First Avenger, stood there right next to Chris Evans. It was skinny Chris, but, you know, when she was filming, it was big Chris. So, it's a plus in my book that she's been able to penetrate both universes like that. And also, she is not my favorite companion. That would go to Dr. Donna, but she is definitely up there. And Rings of Akaton rules! All right, guys. Hope you're having a great time with the cast, and I look forward to listening to it while I'm on my 4th of July drive. Guys, take it easy. Bye-bye now.
Oh my God. There were more plugs in that than the hair club for men. Holy crap.
Welcome to SP is Wrong, Doctor Who edition.
Well, all absolutely valid points.
Yeah.
But I guess it's really just a matter. And let's just say this. We did not set out to do a Clara bashing episode.
No.
Really was not our goal. I wanted to, really, when I pitched this, I just wanted to get everybody talking. That's all. and that did exactly that, because this is a little, as Haley said, this is a little divisive here. But he brought up, in terms of feathers in the cap of what the character has accomplished. And I'm going to both agree and I'm going to use that against him in one statement here. Yes, very few companions can say that they have come to the rescue of the Doctor and the universe within a single throw. But the question is whether or not it was done well. You can hand that plot line to characters, but it's a matter of whether or not you've given it to a character that you genuinely care about.
Well, and the other side of that coin being, could you have handed that plot line to any companion, or was it specifically Clara that needed to be the one to do that? Or, you know, could it have been Martha? Could it have been Tegan? Could it have been Ian and Barbara? You know, could any of them have done that? Or was it specifically Clara that had to be the one?
I think any companion that had gotten to the point in a relationship with any of the Doctor's iterations where they would consider self-sacrifice would have done that. And there are a number of companions that both fit and do not fit in that box. Mm-hmm. But for any of them, both from the, you know, pre-2005 or post-2005, that had that degree of relationship, that had that kind of a commitment, where they had, as a result of their travels with the Doctor, they realized that for the need of the greater good, that it was, whether that greater good was the Doctor's persistence or for the universe's sake, and they could see things on that scale and would make that kind of a move, I could come up with a half a dozen. Mm-hmm. So they just happened to do both of those things with Clara because they could, because you get multiple shots at her.
Yeah.
So
this brings up the question, is it the character of Clara, or is it the things that are surrounding her that are causing the most opinion? Like, we've got one of our listeners, Aragorn's girl, wrote in and said, you know, that she dislikes Clara, but that may be because she didn't like Eleven. She's holding on to hope, seeing that if she'll play better with Capaldi. You know, a lot of the stuff that we got was, you know, look at all the things that, you know, are right here. And it wasn't Clara. It was the things around her. So is there more circumstantial evidence to prove that she's awesome than there is character evidence?
Well, if it's a matter of knowing that she's got the capacity, that the character has the capacity for accomplishing consistently, accomplishing or being that person, you know, whatever it is that, you know, if it's pluck, if it's adaptability, to a certain degree, I'm going to question that term, because adaptability, when you've got a character who's different every other episode, it's tough to say that it's really, that's a trait other than the fact that you're dealing with a totally different instance of the character. So I'm going to put that one aside. But as far as just, you know, that charm or something of that sort, if it's just a matter of the fact that, you know, she can take it as well as she dishes it out and that sort of thing, or she can be, you know, funny and confrontational when needs to be. Okay. I got that. And that's great. And it works out at times really well with Matt Smith, because they had that kind of sibling sort of, I don't know, where they sort of the poke
banter
at each other.
Yeah, the banter. Yeah. It wasn't so much rivalry or anything. It was just the play off of each other. Yeah. And I mean, those were the moments that I truly enjoyed her when she and the Doctor had that exchange, like in Hyde, when, you know, the Doctor's basically riding on the TARDIS and she comes out the door and, you know, the no look high five moment. I was like, that's Clara that I want to continue to see.
Right.
You know, and I feel like that truly was the character, and not just, you know, oh, it was an action filled moment and I'm riding high on adrenaline. So yeah, I felt that was a character moment.
And I wonder what they could have or would have done differently if they'd known they were going to have more time between Clara and Smith's Doctor.
I don't
rephrase for me.
Okay. They knew, I'm assuming, as soon as they introduced Clara, that she was only going to be with Matt Smith's Doctor for half a season. So I wonder if that limited what they chose to do between the two of them.
That's a good question. Because, I mean, a lot of the, the exchange that you get would be between her and the doctor. So are they holding off hope, you know, waiting until she meets the next doctor to really build her up? That's, I mean, that's a okay. distinct possibility.
So we've gotten this, you know, stutter start. You see these little pieces. You've got just enough sort of carrying through all of these, you know, Harry Carey moments, or in certain instances, kamikaze moments where she kind of throws herself down on the grenade for him. And then we get the explanation, in her leaping into the time stream. Okay, that's why she had been there all along, and that's why, every time one of her iterations met the doctor, she immediately just started rolling with everything, and we had noted as the season was unfolding, God, she's really quick to say, oh yeah, sure. Aliens. Yeah, got it. Sure. Time travel. Sure. Where's my key? Do I get a key?
Yeah.
And okay, I get that. Wasn't exactly brilliantly handled from a writing standpoint, but I see what was getting done there. So now, does it mean, okay, we've given you this, it's like handing somebody a filter and there's all this dirt and rock in there and you're just shaking it and shaking it and shaking it and you're just seeing everything tumble and everything's in a state of chaos. Well, now everything is sifted through. Now you've got one. All that other crap can get put aside now, but we have hopefully established that she's in it for the long haul, as long as she's allowed to be there because she cares. Mm-hmm. And now is it a matter of, do we care enough to see her persist?
I think it's too early to call, honestly. I mean, when you look at it, we've had 9 episodes and a special. Well, 8 episodes and 2 specials, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the time that we've had with her is very short. And we've expected an awful lot of her really quickly. So, I think that there's, and I've said this many times, that there's a lot of potential in Clara. It's just untapped.
Mm. Well, what is it that we have yet to see? And I guess this is kind of a good thing for us to be able to sort of, leave the door open for ourselves as we walk away from this discussion is now going forward, we've got kind of 2 major points that we need to deal with Clara as we go into season 8. And that's how she's going to deal with not only just a different doctor, a very different personality, but an older doctor. So that sibling nature is completely off the table, mm-hmm. really. And then if it's a matter of untapped potential, what is it that we're going to see or that we think could draw out of her that could really win over the sort of the fence sitters? I'm not going to say skeptics because you may never win over the skeptics, but the people who are just, kind of like Alien Eye, they're saying, I don't know. It doesn't really matter who she is. She's there. She's not there. That can say, she's imperative. She has to be. She had to be the one there to do this, this, and this.
I want to see more of the contradictory nature. I mean, that you think about how, Donna is one of the most popular companions, and that's because she constantly told the doctor no. She was the one that was like, no, that's not important. This is not, she stood up for herself and she set herself apart. One of the greatest lines from her was when, they were all playing up the fact that the doctor was a Time Lord, and Donna's like, yeah, Donna Noble, human, I'm over here. Yeah. And she's just not like, she's like, no, don't lump me in. It's not the doctor and Donna. I'm Donna Noble. I am my own person. Mm. So if she can stand on her own, if she can, tell the doctor no on occasion and set him straight, be that foil for him, I think that'll go a long way to establishing her as a character that people want to listen to and want to see more of.
Okay. We've got that position out there that could be something. We talked about some of the moments where we've actually kind of warmed up to her to a certain degree. And I think in my recent memory, it, just as you said, it's the defiant moments or the contradictory moments that won me over, or the times when she just outright disregarded what she was advised to do. Don't leave the TARDIS, don't leave my side, or whatever the case may be. Think of Time of the Doctor, clinging to the outside of the TARDIS through mm-hmm. the vortex, and that little, and it wasn't, again, it wasn't a self-sacrifice, this wasn't a suicide moment or anything of that sort, but it was her knowing better what was needed for the moment or for the circumstance.
And her devotion.
That's a strong character.
Yeah.
if that's consistent and we get shades of that on a regular basis, maybe not necessarily always to that degree, but just something that just keeps touching in on, you know, she's there because she chooses to be, not just because she likes adventure. She's there because she genuinely cares. And if she can ride out this period dealing with a whole new doctor who's very spiky and potentially just going through a massive, you know, personality crisis, a really rough regeneration, which I think would be great, then, you know, she could definitely win a lot of people over as being the benevolent force.
Yeah. So there's a question that I've been thinking of, and SP's voicemail brought that to light to some extent, is if you know Stargate Pioneer, if you've listened to any of the other podcasts that he's on, you understand that Agent 13 and Sif and what's her name from Star Trek and all, these are people that he has a tremendous crush on and talks about constantly. So,
even when the occasion doesn't call for it.
Like leaving a voicemail about Clara. But is the fact that Jenna Coleman is absolutely adorable part of the thing that make people want to give her a chance?
I think so.
I'll say no. Because you've got to remember that you have a huge degree of your fan base that could really care less whether or not she's, you know, dimple cheeked and smiley all the time. It's you've got people that fall into many different camps. They might really be kind of hoping out for the romantic little spark thing, you know, if that's something that they love seeing, that just that line get towed, but never quite crossed. Or they really like the fact that, you know, they get to talk to each other sarcastically. So because of the fact that she's youthful against a Matt Smith was something that won them over. But to say, well, you know, she's a knockout in a red dress is enough to say, well, then she deserves to stay for at least another 6 or 8 episodes because we've got a great wardrobe department that has some bang up ideas. Well, okay. Then that would have said that, that Amy should have been around for another 2 seasons then, because you talk about people that are, you know, infatuated with the look of a companion. I mean, you had your Ginger right there.
All right, Haley, you said that you think that that is actually a reason.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've, you know, read through this stuff leading into this cast, and several people were like, oh, she's cute, she's adorable, she's awesome. And those things were all tied together. She's cute and adorable, therefore she's awesome.
Okay. And that's kind of my question, too, is not so much that people are like, I want to continue to see her, therefore she has to stay, but more of like a subconscious, like, yes, I enjoy watching her, so I wouldn't mind if she stuck around for another couple episodes, you know, and giving some kind of hope to that because they don't mind seeing her around for a little bit longer. I don't know. I'm starting to ramble now, but that's, yeah, that's one thing I've said is, you know, there's 2 big reasons why I like Clara, and I'll let you figure out what those are on your own. But, I think that she is absolutely adorable. You know, she's cute. She's got the dimples. She's just absolutely adorable. And if she stays on my screen, yes, I'm not going to complain. It's the character that starts to bother me. But if it were both of them, then would I be saying, no, she needs to go. She's a crap character. She's not attractive. They need to get her off and get somebody else on. You know, is that what is giving people so much pause to saying, no, she's horrible? I don't know. It's just one of those things.
I have one more thought before we move on to news. I wonder if we're ever going to see Clara and the Doctor run into another Clara.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, they've played around with that in the audiobooks. They've had, you know, Doctor crossover where different companions meet. I mean, they've had some fun with that sort of thing too, where you've got all of a sudden there's you know, Perry meeting some of the companions that are traveling with the Eighth Doctor or things of that sort. But they'd handle it so that rather than having 2 doctors in the same episode, they would have the doctor would run off and you'd have another one of the companions run in saying that they were just sent there to do something by their doctor. So couldn't you necessarily have a Clara bumping into a Clara because of the, well, especially if we're going to be doing, well, if we're doing the Hunt for Gallifrey, I would think that could definitely work.
I mean, the question is like, how much do they want to play with the whole crossing your own time stream kind of thing? Because technically does Clara actually have a, a constant time stream, or is this like a different iteration of her? There's a lot of room to play around and a lot of room to say, no, it can't happen because of this. So it really depends on how they want to play it. I mean, they've got the excuse to, they've also got, you know, lots of reasons not to. So I think it would be all kinds of fun to do that and give Jenna Coleman a chance to play a significantly different character. You know, here's a Clara that for some reason grew up on a war-torn planet and, you know, has become hard and has become, you know, a warrior, as opposed to Clara Prime, who clearly is not, you know, and have those two interact. I think that would be a lot of fun, and it would serve as a way to show a distinction and show this is this version of Clara and this is our version of Clara. Here's the differences. So it kind of fills in the blanks on the one that we have.
Okay. Well, I guess you could say that it's an advantage that we have a character that is still somewhat in flux. Mm-hmm. Because then if they need to, as the remainder of this series is getting penned, and I know that they, not everything, you know, the ink hasn't dried on everything that's going to be, you know, put into production over the next couple of production sets that they do, they've got the ability to change her as needed, and we would never be the wiser.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you can call that an advantage.
Yeah, well, it depends on how they handle it. That's the distinguishing factor there, is there's potential, but it has to be handled properly. And I think that's actually what we've been saying about Clara the entire time. There's plenty of potential. It just has to be handled properly.
And for those people that come back and say, well, define properly, unfortunately, to a certain degree, it's kind of, you know, when you see it.
Yeah.
Because we know that to a certain degree, in some of our opinions, we haven't yet seen it. It's been kind of you're getting there, and then they would backpedal a little bit.
Yeah, we've seen glimpses of it, but and then again, it's a matter of opinion. You know, it's, you know, what might be handled properly for one person is completely horrible for the other. I think that the general statement for handled properly would have to be when people care, one way or the other. You know, because I think at this point the general consensus is that everyone is cautiously optimistic. You know, we want more, we're hoping for more, but we really don't have any, you know, set feelings one way or the other.
Mm.
So if we can get to the point where we're made to care about her one way or the other, either yes, I absolutely adore her, or no, oh my God, she has to go, then I'll consider that a success.
I genuinely think if they're done with the mystery aspect of her, and they've landed on the Clara that stays with this doctor this time around, and they can genuinely invest the time and the energy into developing her the way he, Moffat, really wants to see her progress, I think we're going to be okay. I think we were working at a disadvantage because of the fact that they, as I said back at the beginning, they were trying to get us invested in the character that was never consistent from one episode to the next. And it's just tough for the viewer. So if that's now off the table, all right, great. Now you've had some time to play around with a few different character traits. You've gotten, you know, a half a season to be able to see what the actress is capable of, you know, where she's strongest and where she's weakest. Now that you've got all that laid out, give us the best you got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that we're ready for more. It just, time will tell whether or not that more is what we're hoping for. But we've got some news this week.
Oh, just a bit.
Yeah, just a touch. Well, it looks like I get my quarter. I called it right. We will be seeing the first episode of Series 8 on August 23rd. It is official.
Yes.
Yep.
So if you have not already locked that into your calendar, go ahead, do so. Figure out everything else around it, because now I got to realize I got to stack that up against Dragon Con for the second episode. It didn't even occur to me that I thought we were going to deal with the fact that the premiere was going to be airing while I was down at that thing, but now we're going to be an episode in, so make that happen. I got a feeling the entire Whovian floor of the Hyatt is going to be in a mad state that weekend. But it came along with another ever so slightly longer teaser.
Yeah. And just a little bit, and a little bit of actual audio to this one too.
Mm.
So we've got the doctor asking Clara, you know, do you think I'm a good man? And a little snippet of Clara saying she doesn't know who the doctor is anymore. So, and this is something that we've kind of talked about, that this is a brand new situation, a brand new set of regenerations. None of the old rules need apply. You know, we can go completely off the rails here and use the whole, well, it's a new set of regenerations. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how this gets played out.
Well, I mean, and you could tell from the way the audio was cut, they were from two separate conversations.
Well, yeah.
You know, you could just tell from the tone of the dialogue as it was recorded. So, which means that at some point, Clara was having this conversation with someone else mm-hmm. about the doctor, because she's saying, you know, I feel like I don't even know him anymore. So speaking, you know, I'm in the room. but unless this was just done as one of her kind of voiceover moments, who was she talking to?
Yeah.
That she can have that conversation.
Whoever gave her the phone number for the TARDIS and you know, Bells of St. John. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Or
I kind of hope it's Vostra.
Yeah, well, we do know that they're going to be there.
Yeah, that's actually who I'm putting my money on, is one of the Paternoster gang. Mm. So,
because yeah. If it takes four of them to try and see him through this period, well, you know, Strax isn't going to be much help.
Scissor grenades. That's what his that's his contribution.
I understand you have an app on your telephone that's capable of throwing grenades. So, all right. Well, there was one other thing that I wanted to toss out there about this, and this is actually brought up in a couple of the articles of people that, you know, try to take apart the teasers systematically frame by frame. And we saw hints of this in the first teaser, and the fact that there were sparks raining down from the time rotor. Mm. Does that mean that the TARDIS is going through another desktop change? I mean, in this one, you see there's explosions. Things are exploding.
I know. I've gotten into this discussion a number of times, and every time my stance is the same, but I can't back it up. I don't think so, but there's plenty of evidence to show that they will. It seems like such a waste, because we just got this TARDIS control room, and it seems like, no, they wouldn't want to hold on to it for a little bit longer. But at the same time, you know, we've been through an entire section of the Doctor's life with it. You know, it's been there for centuries, apparently, since he was on Trenzalore for so long. So I don't know.
Well,
I mean, we haven't heard anything leaked about a new TARDIS. We haven't seen any pictures or anything. And normally at this point, there's at least buzz. There's at least rumors or something, or, you know, somebody lets something slip, and we haven't heard anything. And I think that that is the biggest thing, saying that, no, we're going to keep this control room for a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm. Right. And just as we had heard, McGann had said in the panel discussion that we were talking about last week, and one of the reasons why they moved up Night of the Doctor was because things were threatening to break. It's just difficult to keep all these plates spinning and keep all of these people stumm for that long. So something even so simple as, you know, one of the prop guys just saying, you know, what are you working on? Oh, it's this new piece. It's got to go in for one of the gizmos. It's going into one of the upcoming Doctor Who episodes. I don't know. It looks like a panel piece. Panel piece?
Well, Whovians never jump to conclusions like that.
Couldn't possibly be.
We never. Not once. Oh, but we do know that the choice will be primarily up to Stephen Moffat, since he will be sticking with the show through Series 9.
Yeah. In a really weird statement, too, about saying, you know, I already know where the penultimate episode of next season is going to be. I was like, okay, so you're not entirely locked into, you know, with where things are going to be for about the next 16 to 20 episodes. But the second to last episode of next season, boy, that's going to be a cracker.
Yeah.
Really?
I honestly, anytime I read anything spoken by Stephen Moffat, my brain automatically goes into, yeah, I don't care. It's Moffat spin. This is what he always does, you know, and it's a whopper. Oh, I don't think you'll see this coming. Like, okay, I've heard this from you countless times, once while ordering lunch, you know, it doesn't really mean anything to me anymore.
Other than the fact that it's going to have a lot of people tuned in to look for the common threads, you know, the blinking light bulb, the, you know, the red tie, the whatever the case may be, because it means that he's playing some kind of long game.
Right.
Which that I totally believe.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few things that he thrives on. He thrives on having long flung arcs. RTD did the same thing, you know, but he loves them. He loves stitching together classic references and new paradoxes. He loves, you know, threading paradoxes together, and he loves writing emotional episodes. So you got those three things, and if he makes mention of any one of those, I believe. How he goes about executing them, no idea.
No, the cliffhanger thing will be that we actually wind up meeting his human mom.
I told you. I told you it was going to happen. Canon, baby.
Yeah. But we also have some news about a new writer for Series 8.
Well, a writer that we now know is going to be involved in a pair of episodes.
Right, right.
So, Jamie Matheson, if you're already familiar with some of the other work done, I think this could be a really beneficial thing, because if it means, when was the last time we had, outside of our core crew, that we had a pair of episodes within a series handed to a single writer? I mean, unless they were part of the Inner Sanctum, like Gatiss or something like that.
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to look at a list. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
But, I mean, as far as Matheson, I mean, proven chops in terms of what he's written for Being Human, for people that were, you know, big fans of of the UK edition of Being Human. Dirk Gently, which was a series that didn't really get a whole lot of time. I think they did maybe three episodes. Somebody out there can correct me if I'm wrong. I tried to watch them pretty religiously because I was really waiting for some Douglas Adams material out there. And they were clever. They just weren't really Dirk Gently, but still enjoyable for people that want to seek him out. And then the movie, which was kind of like the sleeper thing that I know I personally, and a lot of folks latched onto, the frequently asked questions about time travel, which was like a Shaun of the Dead for time travel, you know, all happening within a pub. It was really clever. And it played around a lot with concurrent timelines and backing up over your own timeline. Matheson had a lot of fun with that. And it was actually really interesting, that aspect. So that gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah.
That Jamie knows what he's doing as far as playing with a Whovian script.
Yeah. So I'm really hoping that that's going to play into a script, because that would be fun. We always complain that we don't get enough actual time travel aside from, hey, here we are in this historic or future place. So, then some other news that we've got is actually, unfortunately for people going to San Diego Comic Con, you will not be getting any Doctor Who content from the cast and crew.
Yeah. The original thought was, because, and this is prior to them talking about the August 23rd date, was that, you know, so much was going to be up in the air that it was just going to be a conflict of interest. But Jay, you kind of hit the nail on the head for what you were saying is about what they're preparing for the world tour.
Yeah. I mean, we've got them traveling across, you know, multiple continents and hitting all these different places, all leading up to the premiere. And I think that was just too much for them to try and cram in as well. You know, instead of the show starting in the spring and then being able to like wrap up with Comic-Con, this would be trying to slam that onto the front when they're really gearing up to premiere, which is a new thing now. So I think that at least for this year, that's probably what's stopping them. Next year, assuming that we get the same kind of time frame and they've played it out a little bit, we might, you know, they might say, okay, we can accommodate one weekend here. We can do this. We're not going to be, you know, doing all this stuff ahead of time. So I don't know, but I think this might be, I know that they'll wind up going back to Comic-Con eventually, but this year I think that is really all that was interfered with it.
Yeah, just the way that timed out, and that's understandable. I mean, plus you got to think that they're going to be taken apart by the press junkets and panel discussions prior to the start of the next series. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't envy anyone trying to be very careful about selecting their words when the only things that they're going to be asked have to do with something that the public is going to have within a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
So how do you bite down that hard and not let something slip?
Yeah. And the other thing about that might be the fact that at that point, everything is going to be locked down. Everything, there's not going to be time for, you know, changing this and trying to rewrite this, that, and the other. And we know that Moffat can be a little bit touchy at times. Like, I mean, he up and quit Twitter because people were tearing into him about stuff. Mm-hmm. So if there's nothing he can do to, you know, to counteract the criticism that people might be giving during panels or stuff like that, why is he going to subject himself to it? So I don't know. We haven't gotten an official reason for it, but there's plenty of conclusions to jump to.
Yeah. But apologies, because I know we've got a lot of folks within our circles that are headed out to SDCC. So yeah. Real sorry, folks.
Yeah, but me personally, I'm just hoping that this means that they're going to have even a stronger presence at Gallifrey 1 come February.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be nice, huh?
I mean, it has nothing to do with selfishness and the fact that I'm going to that one instead, but you know, it's
Of course not.
Moving right along. So this one, this last news article, it could be potentially spoilery. It's all based on conjecture, but potential spoilers here.
Well, conjecture and some set photos.
Yeah. Well,
so if this is the point where you say, all right, well, I've heard about all the news that I need to hear now and I can tap out, then go right ahead and thanks for listening. And
yeah,
we'll see you next week. But all right. So set photos coming out on a regular basis, some on various locations as they do their multi-location shoots. And I guess from what some of the photos that that we had come across, these actually from I forget which of their locations they were actually starting to assemble or offloading some of the prop pieces. But as the production crew was, they're in Cardiff at the National Museum, which they used back in the day, the Doctor. So they were taking some of these props, and one of them was a big memorial obelisk.
Yeah.
And it has a Gallifreyan symbol on it. And below that reads in clear English, rest in peace, we promise.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of conjecture as to, well, okay, well, it's a tombstone. Well, whose tombstone is it? Who could possibly be dead? And because of the fact that there's Gallifreyan on there as well as English, throws all kinds of things into conjecture.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the big theories that's out there is that it's Clara's grave, which could be because, hell, we've got hundreds of those at this point.
Yeah. We've seen one before.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
But if this is rest in peace, we promise. This time it's real.
We promise you're not coming back next time.
Right.
No, it's they changed it. They changed Rory's tombstone. That's what it is. No, wait. It's been 3 weeks. He hadn't come back yet. Okay, we're final now.
Well, it could because other people had said, "All right, well, it could be the Masters, right?" Because we've had some things bandied about that we might be seeing the Master again, or another iteration of the Master this series. There are certain characters that still persist. You know, Raslan pokes up his dopey head every once in a while. I'm not dead yet, you know, kind of keeps coming back out of it. If you remember Romana in the extended material, Romana at one point became really high up in the ranks of the Time Lords. She became the president of Gallifrey for a considerable length of time. So it could be, you know, it could be her tombstone for all we know. Although I think in that case it would have been something more along the lines of a mausoleum, or you know, she was a Time Lady, so she would have been buried within her TARDIS, which is apparently what you do according to Trenzalore. So I don't know. The Clara theory has some merit.
Yeah. So I don't know. My personal opinion is that this is just going to be something that's a plot point for that particular episode or for the overarching storyline, but it's something that we just aren't privy to yet. It's going to be set up in this series and is going to obviously reach its conclusion. So I don't think that it's anything that we know just yet. We'll have to see.
Sit here waiting. I've been waiting for freaking 6 months. I've been waiting and waiting.
Yeah.
Not bitter.
Not at all. No, of course not. But that's all the news that we've got this week.
Yeah, as if you really needed it. So here you go. Now you know when your show's starting back up again. Just a minor thing. Nah.
Yeah.
I just got to say, this GPR news section, amateur hour.
Next week we are going to be taking a look at the life and the regenerations of the Doctor. You know, the flow that we've got leading from one Doctor to the next, and you know, possibly where it's leading us into the future.
Yeah, so it's the stitching that you see between each of your Doctors, and whether there's some significance because of the fact that you're going from one personality to another. Is that a smoother transition? Who are some of the Doctors that had some of the easiest ways going about it versus some of the really most difficult transitions? And is there a pattern, or is there a logic behind that because of the actors or just because of where the show was at the time? So it could be really useful as far as where we're headed.
Yeah.
August 23rd.
All right.
When is that?
I believe it's a Saturday.
Possibly.
Yeah, much better than the Wednesday that they were pitching earlier. The 27th. What?
Oh, yeah. This has been episode 93 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, she's a mystery wrapped in an enigma, squeezed into a skirt that's just a little bit too tight.
And this is Kira saying, be a pound player and tell me, am I a patient man?
And this is Haley saying, run, you clever boy, and remember.
We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows by calling 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1477 to leave us a voicemail. You can head to GallifreyPublicRadio.com to leave comments on each episode. There you can also keep up to date on all the latest news and gossip, as well as what's going on in the community. Also make sure to head over to GunnaGeek.com to find out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.